I feel like I say this a few times a year, but this is one of my favorite pods of the year. The over-unders, we're going to be going back to 5 days a week starting today. We're going to do the Eastern Conference over-unders today. Western Conference will be coming tomorrow. And Danny is going to join me to go through all these. We'll start with the Eastern Conference and the Atlanta Hawks.
This is one of the absolute hardest ones for me, so I think it's kind of fun to start with it because I can see
it was hard
very
last
good
year
arguments.
Too.
It was. I liked the over last year because I am just a broad believer in Budenholzer. But what happened is the team changed substantially and their expectations dropped, but you know there's a good reason for it. So the line is set at 43.5. I tentatively go over on the logic that I think Dwight still has something there and that their culture and all that kind of stuff is there. And while the point guard situation scares me quite a bit, I think they have enough talent to be, you know, enough over 500 to make me feel okay about this.
Yeah. And a bit of a note here on how we're getting the lines. I'm basing this initially on where they came out from the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook a couple of weeks ago. They actually came out early this year. We scheduled this podcast for October 1st, because that's usually when they come out. But they came out a little early, and I was on vacation, but I broke into my vacation so we could do this now. And then for a few of them where it's really changed, I actually went down the street to William Hill. There's just like these little betting windows that you can go into and got their updated odds. The guy had to actually like call into the office because I think he had like barely heard of the NBA. He didn't know how to spell Milwaukee for Chris Middleton. So for those ones, I did like 5 or 6 teams where I felt like the line should have moved. We will note though that we made our picks when these all first came out, and we'll note what those were, and then if there's a line move and that changes things, we'll note that as well. So you went with the over on the Hawks. I'm going to go under that 43.5 on the podcast with Kale Chenard. I said 43 as my prediction, so I obviously do not feel particularly strongly about that. But my thought is that Dennis Schroeder might not be ready. The Paul Millsap knee issue is a little bit concerning. That Kyle Korver took a big step back last year, and while he could be a little bit better this year, he's also getting into his upper 30s now. And I mean, they're really just so reliant on Millsap to be what he has been the last 2 years, and I'm just not sure into his early 30s now if he's going to be able to do that. And so that's why I'm tentatively going with the under.
Next up, Boston Celtics, a team, if memory serves, we both liked the over last year, and they won 48 last year. It's set at 51.5. I like the over. This is a team that has outperformed their expectations under Brad Stevens, and that got meaningfully better. You know, they had a series of injuries last year, and they, you know, they need their key players to stay healthy because 52 is a lot of wins, but I think they're going to do it.
Yeah, I think so too. I think I predicted them for 53. I think this team could be the number one defense in the league, having added Horford. There's really nobody on this team that you expect to be worse. I don't think that losing Evan Turner is going to hurt them too badly. And they've got a lot of guys really who can improve. They have a lot of depth too. I really, in these over-unders, I love teams that have a lot of depth because even if they suffer an injury or two, you can expect them to kind of keep right on trucking. I think that Horford is really, really going to help them offensively. And unless something happens to Isaiah Thomas or Horford, I think that they're going to get there. I'm not saying this is like one of my best bets or anything like that, but I do think this team has some considerable upside and they're going to defend. They're going to be well coached and they've got a lot of depth. So those are the kind of teams that I really like for these over-unders, so for, certainly for the regular season. How good they'll be in the playoffs, that's another question. But I think they're a decent bet to beat that 51.5.
And something quick I want to mention with them is also you talked about depth in terms of surviving injuries. But one thing that's also really good about Boston is they have a lot of guys in that lower echelon who could get a lot better. You know, if got players like Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart, even Jaylen Brown, like if those guys outperform expectations, they can fit into a larger role. Boston can accommodate that.
Yeah, and you also have to remember, too, that last year their point differential was really good throughout most of the regular season. They punted a bunch of the year starting David Lee, who had like a -4 net rating. So getting rid of him, I think there's even reason to believe there's that Jay Crowder high ankle sprain at the end of the year. I think there's reason to believe for this team that they were even better than their 48 wins a year ago. And you would expect having added Horford, only lost Turner, and with most of the guys on this team young enough to get better, I think that can easily make up that 3.5 wins over what they did last year.
So move on to Brooklyn. Brooklyn last year won 21 games. Vegas thinks they're going to be about the same, setting the line at 20.5. And I feel pretty comfortable with the over here. One of the things I looked into when I was preparing this back when the lines came out was that the Nets weren't much worse after the All-Star break, and they had a lot of guys that were dealing with stuff at that point. Brook Lopez stayed pretty healthy, which is important to consider. But they massively upgraded at point guard, which was their biggest sticking point last year. And while there is this prospect of trading Lopez, who is one of their best players, I think Rondé, the upgraded point guards, and just kind of having a little bit more talent overall on the team will be enough to push them over this extremely low bar.
Yeah, there's really only one reason to think that they wouldn't be better than last year, and they had a 22-win point differential, so a little bit better than they actually ended up with. They, in theory, are not going to tank because they don't have the draft pick, so that's a reason to feel good about them. They did lose Thaddeus Young, and they probably have the worst power forwards in the league now, which is definitely a problem, but they upgraded significantly a point guard. Both Lynn and Vasquez are better than anyone that they had last year. Rondé hopefully can play a whole season. Sean Kilpatrick, they might get something out of him as well. He only came on late in the year. And also remember, you say, oh, they lost Joe Johnson. Well, Joe Johnson was awful for them, and he just had this crazy renaissance in Miami. The first 3 months of the year, Joe Johnson did absolutely nothing for them. So they really had another kind of dead spot there. Backup point guard last year was atrocious. They had really three or four spots in the rotation that were replacement level or below, and I expect that to be improved. The only thing that gives me some pause, number one, is the power forward situation. Number two is the potential of a Lopez injury or trade.
Yeah, I think it's really those same two things for me. And the power forward situation does concern me, but point guard versus power forward for this team, it was such a big reason for them to be bad last year that I think it trumps it overall.
All right, next up, the Charlotte Hornets. This one actually started at 39.5, which is ludicrous. Last year, they were like 32.5 before the MKG injury, which was ludicrous as well. We loved that. We were thinking there were 40 wins even after the MKG injury. I was still thinking they were going to go over. Now, according to my little trek over to William Hill, they're up to 42.5. People have been apparently hitting the over on that. Obviously, it's not the same sports book, but you would expect them to be somewhat consistent. I predicted on my podcast with Spencer Percy that they would win 46 this year. It is a little troubling that Kemba Walker hasn't been cleared for contact yet, since he supposedly just had a minor scope, but you expect maybe they're just bringing him along slowly. I still like the over here pretty well, even if it's at 42.5. And we wrote this down when it was 39.5. I mean, that probably would have again been one of my best bets. Now I don't feel quite as strongly about it with the Walker news, and also that the fact that it's now 42.5, but I still feel pretty confident in the over with these guys.
Yeah, I echo pretty much all that. But one of the other things I look at is, was their win total the prior year unrealistic? Like, was that, and them winning 48 last year was, you know, wasn't that off of it? You know, it was like they really outperformed expectations or anything like that. You know, they are weaker from a talent level. Losing Jeremy Lin does hurt them, but I don't think it hurts as much as, you know, this kind of a thing. And so, yeah, I'm over as well. But you're right that the Kemba stuff is a big concern, because they also, you know, they downgraded backup point guard. So that is a specific injury that is harder for them to withstand. If MKG can actually play, let's say he plays 40 games this year, I think they do this comfortably. And if he does, you know, if he plays fewer, it'll be a little bit tougher. But yeah. I still really like Charlotte, and Clifford's a great coach. Like, I think they've done a really nice job defensively the whole time he's been there. And, you know, they have some guys, not as many as Boston, but they have some guys like Kaminsky that if they can show more than they did last year, it could really help them flush out their depth. And they actually have three centers this year, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think their defense should be comfortably better than it was last year. Last year, their defense was eighth in the league. I think with Roy Hibbert getting some minutes, Clifford is going to do a great job of using him. MKG being back, I think Kaminsky getting some more experience, getting more comfortable executing the system. I think that they can be much better on defense this year. I don't think they'll be as good on offense because they downgraded a backup point guard. MKG's shooting is not going to help them spread the floor the way they did before. Hibbert is atrocious on offense. So I think they could take a step back on offense, but I think they could get into the top five in defense maybe. And again, I feel pretty good about these guys. Marvin Williams is a little bit of a risk to regress because he was great last year, hadn't been good the couple of years before that. So there definitely is some risk here. And I At 39.5, I would have felt great about it. At 42.5, not so much, but I still comfortably going for the over on this one. Let's take a quick break to talk to you about Movement Watches. That's MVMTwatches.com/capspace is how you can find out more about them. I've never really been someone who was that interested in owning a watch, frankly. Right about when I graduated from college, everyone had a cell phone, so I would just look at my cell phone to figure out what time it was. But the other problem was that stylish watches would cost at least $500. And the reason that they cost so much is, well, you've heard of them, right? How have you heard of them? They do a ton of marketing. They have middlemen, so they put their product in stores. Movement has gotten rid of all that. If you're looking at a $400 to $500 watch in a department store, Movement watches start at just $95. And by selling online, they can cut out that retail markup and give us the best possible price. I got the Gunmetal Sandstone Band watch, which is awesome. It's got over 859 customer reviews. I encourage you to check that out. We've ordered one for my girlfriend as well. I'll let you guys know what she thinks of it once we get it. But it definitely looks awesome in the photos. And it's just nice having a watch. You look stylish. You didn't have to pay that much. The one that I got is only $135, but it looks like ones that cost a lot more. So the way to get started with them, MVMTwatches.com/capspace is that URL. They just have some beautiful looking watches. I really encourage you to check it out. MVMTwatches.com/capspace lets them know as well that you came from us. Join the movement.
Next up, Chicago Bulls. They won 42 games last year in what was, I think, widely considered to be a negative season for them in terms of expectations, partially because Jimmy Butler missed time. But the line is set at 38.5.
They had the point differential of a 37-win team a year ago. And while much has been talked about with their spacing, with Rondo, Wade, Butler, the starters, Mirotić supposedly is competing to be the starter with Taj Gibson. If they start Taj Gibson, it's really going to get ugly as far as their spacing. I assume that it's going to end up being Mirotić who gets that just because they need somebody who can shoot the ball on this team. But I'm more worried about their defense than I think that Wade and Rondo are liabilities. They're going to have to play Mirotić, who's only okay. Doug McDermott's going to have to get a lot of time. Lopez, I think, is an only average defensive center. I don't think these guys are going to be able to stop anybody. They didn't last year. I don't think that Hoiberg has shown that he's a great defensive coach. So I think the defense is what makes me it's hard for me to imagine these guys can get above the league average in offense. And I think similarly in defense, I expect them to be below average as well. So I think that 38.5 is a pretty good line to me. I will go slightly under. I don't have a specific win prediction for them yet. I'm thinking 36, 37. Although one thing to note, too, is that these guys probably foolishly don't believe in tanking at all. They had played Jimmy Butler and won two completely meaningless games at the end of last year to finish with 42, cost themselves a couple of rungs in the draft that way. So they may at least play out the string, even if they're not quite in playoff position.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point to bring up. I chuckled a little bit with your note about defense because one of the lines in my write-up from when the lines came out was they don't have the defense or offense to get a real identity. And I think that's one of the big problems with this team is I like to think about, okay, how are they going to beat opponents? I think about that with everybody. So you think about, you know, the things that they can do, and they do have some positives, of course. But there are a lot of ways that other teams can beat them. And that's when I start to think, okay, a team's going to be under 500. A team's going to go through all that stuff. And there aren't really a ton of ways for them to improve in the short term. You know, I don't think they're going to trade Jimmy Butler anyway. I don't think they would get better in the short term. And Rondo and Wade are pretty much locked in. You know, there isn't really much of a situation where they would move them. So you're not really going to see that kind of a circumstance, which is the other way if a team's going to sell assets to get better now. And that doesn't feel like this team this year, though you're right that they probably won't tank because there isn't a lot of a good reason for it given their organizational structure.
Yeah, I'm going to start calling this team the Chicago Black Hole, just whatever the densest substance that you can imagine. There's just no spacing on this team whatsoever. So if anyone else would like to propose an incredibly dense substance, that would be funnier. Feel free, but that's going to be the nickname for these guys until further notice. Cleveland, 56.5. They have not beaten that in either of the 2 years of the second LeBron James era. You have to imagine they feel fantastic about where they are in the Eastern Conference. They have not been remotely challenged either of those 2 years. And with Kyrie Irving, a guy who's always been injury prone, LeBron James kind of not taking the regular season too seriously. Kevin Love, another guy who's kind of been in and out of the lineup at times. And then also the lack of depth behind Irving now with the retirement of Mo Williams. I feel pretty good about the under, and I don't think they're even necessarily going to be pushing incredibly hard for home court advantage because nobody in the East, I think, remotely scares them.
This is one of only two in the Eastern Conference that changed during the, for me, during the time from when we, from when the lines came out to now. And I was over on the logic that Kyrie missed almost 30 games last year and Tristan Thompson didn't become a starter for a while because they were Mozgov and everything else. And so those two things are indicators that they won 57 last year. They could win more, but Mo Williams thing and the fact that they just, it doesn't seem like it'll be a priority for them, and it shouldn't be, because not only is it the idea of, you know, that it won't take 56 games to win the division or to win the conference, sorry, but they can win the playoffs from the 3 seed. They can win from the 4 seed if they ever really wanted to. So we could see some real patience from them. So I don't love this one. I think it's a pretty well set line because their talent level is just high enough that when they're cruising at full strength, they should win a lot of games. But there will be times that they stumble and just go at whatever.
Yeah, I also think that the big variable for me now with these guys is Irving, both his health and also where he is overall as a player. He undoubtedly had a great playoffs, an unbelievable last 3 games of the finals, but he also hasn't really done it through an entire regular season, especially on defense. I think that he can get extremely hot and can make a lot of really tough shots and carry the team to victory in some games, but there are other games when he's not moving the ball enough, when he might just be off a little bit. I'm not sure that over the course of an entire regular season he can keep up what he did in the playoffs, but you remember that he also started last year hurt, took him a while to get back into the groove. And so if he can provide what he did towards the end of the playoffs all year, then I think they might be a better bet for the over, but we haven't seen that yet from him over a full season. And again, they really do not have anything backing him up at this moment under the, other than Kay Felder. And then J.R. Smith still isn't signed either. You know, that's, we'll see how long that takes, but maybe he could even end up missing games, you know, and that would really be hurtful for them as well. They need his shooting around all this other stuff that they are doing.
Detroit Pistons, they won 44 games last year. Their line is set at 45.5. I went over. I think that one of the big things with them is that they made some improvements last year during the year, including getting Tobias Harris, who I think will be benefited greatly from being a part of their offseason and knowing what they want from him. They got deeper, which is good. They got sabotaged by the B&B losing factory last year, which is a little unfair to Aaron Baines because he played a lot better after that. But replacing Steve Blake with Ish Smith is big. They just have more bigs now. And there are concerns with this team. I mean, basically, a Reggie Jackson injury completely sinks them. But I think they're going to go over. I think that they have a good coach. I can see why they would be better than they were from an age perspective. And, you know, and there are guys like KCP who, while he was actually disappointing last year offensively, that I still have hope that he can get better. And when you have that kind of combination of factors with a team, I think they could be pretty solid this year.
They did win those 44 games last year. Expected one loss was 43-39. I think they can be a lot better. 45.5, I think, is a pretty solid line. I predicted them for 45 on the podcast that I did with Dan Feldman. Don't see any reason to change that necessarily. So I'm going to go with a very tentative under, but I think this team does have a lot of upside. I do like the fact that they just don't really have any huge holes any longer. They've gotten a backup point guard now. They've got Boban, they've got Baines, they've got Lure. One of those three guys should be able to provide decent play at backup center. So I think, and they've got some pretty decent depth on the wing. Stanley Johnson maybe can get to where he could be pretty good. He was another guy who, while he has some potential, really was just a replacement level player throughout most of the season last year in terms of his efficiency and the on-off metrics. So I think if he can get just even closer to passable, getting rid of a lot of those bad spots could really help. This is one I'm a little bit tempted to change, but I think I'll stick with that 45 wins, but this is one of the ones that I feel least confident in.
Yeah, that's certainly fair. I think it's a well-set line, which are always the ones that you like the least. Indiana, they won 45 last year and had some pretty wholesale changes. I mean, we've talked about it a lot on the pod. We'll talk about it a lot more in the near future. But the line is set at 43.5, and I think that's a good line, but I'm going under The fit in terms of defense is really shaky now. And people have talked about how they're excited about Thaddeus Young coming in, but really he's replacing Jan Mahinmi because they played Mahinmi and Miles Turner so much together. And Mahinmi played well last year and was a part of their successful defense. So, you know, Thad's a good player. I'm not knocking him at all, but that's a change. And then Teague for Hill, you and I are both dissenting voices on this idea that that's somehow an upgrade for them, especially with their specific talent. And there are reasons to think that Paul George can outperform this. I think Paul George is one of the best players in the league. He can carry a team beyond 44, 45 wins. But I don't think that's the most likely outcome.
Yeah, so I was already, because it seemed like the conventional wisdom was, oh, these guys improved so much. They got Al Jefferson. They got Thaddeus Young. They got Jeff Teague. He's so much better than George Hill, which I, of course, don't agree with. And I was surprised to see that this was as low as it was. I still am going to go with the under, and my biggest reason for that is last year they were third in defense, and they've been great on defense for years, but I think there are four things that made them really good on defense last year, because Turner wasn't really ready as a rookie. Jan Mahinmi was outstanding at one of the best defensive RPMs in the league. George Hill, awesome point guard, just look what he did to Kyle Lowry, for example, in that playoff series against the Raptors. And then Frank Vogel as well. Now they're keeping the assistant staff in place, and that's the party line is with, I think, Dan Burke as the assistant. The party line is, oh, we're going to keep the same system. It's all going to be the same. You know, I'm not sure that that's necessarily true. We're not there. It's hard to know that. And Vogel certainly was a guy who emphasized defense a lot, and there's only a finite amount of practice time. So I think that they're, and then they replacing Hill with Teague. They still have Monte Ellis, who's going to be a year slower. Young is pretty decent, but I think Turner has a lot of tools, but his pick and roll defense needed a ton of work last year, and so I'm not sure that he's ready yet from an experience level despite his physical gifts. I think the defense is going to take a major step back this year, and that the offense is poised to be far less than the sum of its parts due to a lack of spacing, nobody on this team who really projects as a particularly efficient player, although they do, of course, have plenty of shot creation. So I think the offense might improve a little bit. You know, maybe they get up, I don't think they're going to be much better than maybe like the 20th best offense, because they still don't have much spacing and they still don't have much efficiency. And then I think the defense could take a very major step back. I mean, you really only have Paul George as really a proven, very good defensive player on this team now. So expecting them to be third, I think, is very unlikely this year.
There are two more points I want to mention. First is that if and when Miles Turner misses time, whether that's due to foul trouble, which could be a big problem this year, or due to injury, you know, him just missing time, their defense falls even more apart because Al Jefferson's their backup and they don't really have that upside, you know, even just a bouncy shot blocker at the five outside of that. So, you know, when you're thinking about replacing those minutes, that's a big problem. And the other thing that concerns me with the Pacers is, for a variety of reasons, they don't have a ton of guys on this team that could really step up and improve. You know, like they're older than a lot of people think, partially because they haven't hit on that many draft picks, and because they were good for so long, they didn't really have a lot of opportunities. So there are players like CJ Miles who could thrive in a larger role, but there, Joe Young, you know, like you're not sitting there going, oh man, if LaVoy Allen gets a chance, he could really blow up and things like that. And so that is another reason why you go under, is because there aren't players who can outperform their place and really kind of buoy this team's chances.
How many of the games do you think you're going to win?
39, 40, something in that range.
Yeah, I might go a little higher than that. I might go 41. But even that.
It certainly just could be.
Yeah, it all depends on how much of this great defense they can maintain, because I just don't see how they get into the top half of the league in offense with the lack of spacing and the lack of efficient shot makers that they have on this team. So Miami, this is one of the ones where I got the updated line for. Started at 36.5. With the Chris Bosch news now down to 34.5, and I think the Bosch news was kind of already priced in to that 36.5 with the uncertainty with him, now 34.5. I'm going to go with a tentative over for these guys nonetheless. What do you think of that?
There's certainly rationale for it. So I went over 36.5 thinking Bosch wasn't really going to play very much, and it's really hard with them because, so what I wrote at the time when we did this was, the first line of my thing is, they're an all-timer in terms of disaster potential. And the reason for that is, they're now, especially with Bosch out, they are really dependent on Dragic for creation and Whiteside for interior defense. And one of the challenges of the way their offseason worked is that they got all these one-year rental guys, and they got all the one-year rental guys after the market had mostly been picked clean. And so Bosch, Dragic, and Whiteside would have been enough to kind of keep them afloat. Those guys are all incredibly good. Now they need them to play incredibly well. I think Dragic is going to have a very good year. I think that he'll be good. And Josh Richardson and Tyler Johnson are both very good complements in the backcourt for him. So there are reasons to see the over here. I'm going under. It being at 34 makes me uncomfortable, but I just see there being a lot of potential. This is one, like, if they were betting it, I wouldn't even touch. So I went over originally, and this is the other one of the East that changed for me to go under, but it's super close. Like, I totally get why people would go over, because they have a lot of talent. Like, I think maybe there are some players on this team that are underappreciated, but there are just, for me, there are a lot of reasons, especially if you consider that, you know, that they're keeping their own pick and they have tanked in the past, that they could do that again.
Yeah, that last point is one that gives me great pause. And I'm not saying go out and bet this over by any means. This is a team in 2007-08 when Dwayne Wade missed part of the year. They totally tanked it. They got the number two pick in the draft, drafted Michael Beasley that year. And then to keep the pick that became Justice Winslow, they ultra shut everything down just at the very end once they were clearly out of the playoffs in 2014-15 when Bosch was out as well. So that's there's definitely that potential, and I think the team realizes with the picks that they owe to Phoenix, the fact that they think they're going to get a lot better in free agency, this is their one chance to really again try to get a superstar in what's going to be a good draft. So I do think at the very end of the year, especially if they are around that number, they are going to be tanking. The other thing that bothers me too is that I think Josh Richardson, if this sprained MCL that he has, I really was hoping he could come in, seize that starting shooting guard role. I was a big believer in what he could do. Really was impressed by his summer league. And now with him being a little bit behind, it's a concern. I mean, and if he was healthy and if Bosch were healthy, I would have been thinking this team's going to win 45 games. But that's obviously not going to happen now. Josh McRoberts is also dealing with a stress reaction. The news came out that he actually played game 7 on a broken foot against the Raptors last year. So there's definitely, but I do think Dragic is a very good player. I think that they're going to have more spacing this year. I think that Winslow can play a lot as a small ball four, that they're going to be able to switch everything. Richardson, Winslow, even Deion Waiters, Tyler Johnson, those are going to be some guys who can really defend on the perimeter. And I think their defense could be a lot better than people think it's going to be. That's my biggest reason for thinking that these guys might be pretty good. And then the Dragic-Whiteside pick and roll combo with some decent shooting around there. I mean, Johnson and Richardson are going to have to hit threes the way they have in smaller sample sizes, so that's a concern. But I think these guys are going to stop people. That's the number one reason I think that they could be over this. I don't feel confident in it. I almost just talked myself out of it right now because I probably said more negative than positive things. But I believe in Spoelstra. I believe these guys are going to play hard. I think the young guys can get better, and they're just going to be athletic, and they're going to defend.
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons like to be positive on this team. I was thinking Miami had been undersold for a while, and then just thinking about the composition of their team. It's a really tough one. Ready to move on to Milwaukee?
We'll get back to the East over-unders in just a second. But first, I want to tell you about the inaugural sponsor of the Dunked On Basketball podcast, the SeatGeek app. Before we even had any sponsors, people at SeatGeek actually listened to the program, really enjoyed it. They reached out to me, and that was really the first step for me in realizing that this could be a business for me. SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. They do all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites, and they make sure that you get the best possible deal. You don't have to go to 8 million sites now. You can just look at SeatGeek. They do all the work, and you save time and money. I'm going to actually look on SeatGeek because I'm going to be in New Orleans, maybe take my dad to that New Orleans versus Indiana preseason game on Tuesday. I'm going to look on SeatGeek for tickets because it's definitely the first place to look. And of course, it wouldn't be a Dunked On ad if my listeners did not get a special deal, a $20 rebate on tickets. You can download the free SeatGeek app. You go into the settings tab, click add a promo code, and you enter that familiar CapSpace promo code. Easy to remember because we talk about CapSpace all the time on the show. And SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download that free SeatGeek app, enter promo code CapSpace today to let them know that you came from us and to get that $20 rebate after you've made your first ticket purchase. Yes, and I was shocked. They started off at 39.5, which I thought was too high, and I did 37 on my now aborted podcast with Frank Madden that we're going to have to re-record because of the Middleton news. And so the guy called in, and I made him double-check that the line is only 38.5 now at William Hill. So I was very surprised it only went down by one, with Middleton projected to be out until like March with that hamstring surgery. And with, I mean, Middleton might have been their best player last year. He is also the only thing approaching a decent two guard that they have on the roster. I think that that injury is going to cost them like 5 or 6 wins. So I am all about the under on these guys. Unfortunately, I had it 37 before. If I had to redo it now, I'd say 33. You have to remember too that last year, while they won 33 games, they had an expected one loss of only 29-53. So that's really where you're starting from last year. And now they're going to lose Middleton. I don't see how, one of their best defensive players as well. I don't see anybody on this team now who's really going to stop anybody. Maybe it's Giannis if he gets a lot better, but he's going to have the ball in his hands all the time now. Dele is a good team defender, plays hard, but not really a stopper type. Middleton was the only guy who gave them any spacing whatsoever other than Dele, so they're really going to have no three-point shooting. Rashad Vaughn is going to be starting at the two for these guys. Like, the downgrade from Middleton to Rashad Vaughn, I mean, that seems like that's like 8 wins or something, like just right there, assuming that Middleton misses most of the year. So I think this is one of my best bets, I think, is there under on that 38.5.
I'm there too. And that's disappointing because there are so many things to like about Milwaukee. And one of the aspects of last year that gave me encouragement in terms of this season is that they had a lot of trouble figuring out their center rotation. They spent a lot of money on Greg Monroe for a good reason, but he just didn't work specifically defensively. And then when Point Giannis came in, there isn't really a spot for Greg Monroe in that starting lineup offensively. And so they have John Henson and Miles Plumlee who fit better with that, and that can work. But Chris Middleton not only provides something essential for that group, he also has no replacement. And so that combination, also the timing on this is very in line. If they perform to about the expectations that you and I have, if he comes back in late March to just be, depending, there are two ways you can do it. One is to just kind of put him on this low energy thing just to give him some reps, a little bit more like what Indy did with Paul George the year that he recovered from his leg injury. Or you just say, oh, just stay at home for the rest of the year. And then they just kind of blow those last 10 to 15 games and get a good draft pick, which could be a great thing for them in the long term because they need more talent. But, you know, it really does. It's unfortunate for their fans and everything like that. So this is, like you said, especially if we're talking just about the East, this is one of my favorite bets on the board, which sucks. Giannis is one of my favorite players in the league, and there are reasons that I do really like them, but they just don't have enough. And with the way that the Eastern Conference is right now, where a lot of these kind of middle teams are better than they were, there aren't going to be as many easy wins for them to pick off as in other years, and playing hard and playing good defensively. And we're not even sure if they're going to be great defensively. Like, that's not something they were last year. So yeah, I'm going under here comfortably, and it sucks. I wish I didn't have to feel that way, but that's the way it is.
Well, see, Seth, at least we feel bad about it.
We feel terrible about it. Like, yeah.
Well, I will say this. I agree with you that I think it's better for them long-term because now, especially with the Giannis extension that came through, they are really capped out for the foreseeable future, and they need to get better at either center or point guard, and that's assuming that Middleton comes back, or get another good option on the wing if they're really going to get into contention in the long term. And I think they'll get a good enough draft pick now this year that'll actually be possible. So I think it actually, the long-term future for them is actually looking up as a result of this injury, as crazy as that is to say, assuming that, you know, I mean, that bad of a hamstring injury, I think, is something, those kind of muscle injuries can really dog you throughout a career. So hopefully that's not something that's going to stick with Middleton. I mean, I can't remember the last time someone
missed. Another reason why he might sit the whole year, because you don't push it with hamstring injuries.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember the last time someone missed 6 months with a hamstring injury. I mean, he must have, like, torn that thing right off the bone. It really sounds awful. So, yeah, I think I would predict them for low 30s now in wins. I mean, they've got one guy on this team who's really established himself as an above average player. And then they also have Monroe and Carter Williams, guys who have been starters in their career, came to Milwaukee expecting to start, are in contract years, and are now not going to be starting if you're reading the tea leaves. So that they are not going to be happy. I don't think that the chemistry is going to be too great this year either for that reason. And that's another reason to think, you know, that those intangibles don't really bode well for these guys either.
Yeah. The New York Knickerbockers won 32 games last year, decided to spend a lot of money on guys in their late 20s, early 30s. And there, so the line is set at 38.5. The way that I've phrased this is that at full strength, they should be solid but beatable. But when they lose almost anybody, it will be really hard for them to be a 500 team. And so if you want to bet on all of, you know, Courtney Lee being healthy, Melo being healthy, Joe Noah being healthy, by all means, you can consider the over. But I don't think that's a reasonable bet to make, so I'm going under.
I predicted them for 37 in the pod with Jason Concepcion and Jared Dubin a couple of weeks ago. I am still then going to be at the under. The quotes from Derrick Rose about, hey, this triangle is really confusing, from the player who probably might be the worst player in the league to be in the triangle offense. It looks like they really are going to keep trying that crap instead of just like spreading the floor and running pick and roll or running things through Noah at the elbow and doing some DHOs or some pick and pop with Porzingis, not really something that's in the triangle. So if they're still going to have to do that, and I mean, the quote was that Phil Jackson like yelled at them for not throwing the ball into the post in the triangle. So this whole Jeff Hornacek's going to have all this freedom to run what he wants. Doesn't look like that's necessarily going to be the case. The more triangle they run, especially with guys who don't provide a lot of spacing, like Rose, can't shoot jumpers. So need a space floor. That is not encouraging to me. And I feel pretty decently about the under on these guys. I thought the 38.5 was a decent line, but I feel the under is the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about their backup shooting guard depth, you go, oh yeah. Like, I mean, Sasha and Justin Holiday, who at least got an incomplete in Hawks University, probably got worse considering they traded him away for basically nothing. And so you have those guys as being the backups there for Courtney Lee, who has, you know, he's dealt with some injury stuff in his past. And Brandon Jennings will probably be a little bit marginalized as long as Derrick Rose is there. And this is something I talked about with Jared Dubin when I went on Locked On Knicks, is that when you have two guys that play the same position that are both good, and another example, this will be the Suns point guards. It's great if they can play together because then they can each get enough minutes and they'll be happy. You can't play Brandon Jennings and Derrick Rose together. Like, that's not going to work. So either one of the guys is going to be mad about the minutes they're playing, or you're going to play this combination that makes no sense. And so that is a big problem. The only bench guys on this team that I like are Lance Thomas and Kylo Quinn, both of whom I like quite a bit. And, you know, they have these kind of interesting depth bigs, but I don't think that's necessarily, they're at the level to really step up at this point with Hernan Gomez and Kuzminskas. And so we'll have to see. But I just think that while there are reasons to be optimistic, I think the most likely, if we're going EV, is that they go under this just because something happens.
Yeah, and then there's also the injury risk as well, which is quite significant with guys like Rose and Joakim Noah, even Carmelo. Also, Carmelo could be a regression candidate from last year, just getting to the age that he's at here. And maybe Porzingis will just blow up so much that he can make up for a lot of these other problems, but I don't think they're going to be putting him in a position to thrive at all with his skill set, which should be pick and pop. This one, to me, was the hardest one on the board. Orlando, 36.5. How did you do this one?
I didn't think this was the hardest one on the board. And the reason for it is that while there are reasons to be negative about, you know, their offense, because it's scary. It's legitimately scary because they don't have a ton of creation. But the addition of Frank Vogel and the addition of Ibaka and Biombo gives them the potential to have a truly great defense. And a truly great defense and an even a shaky offense is enough. And so the example I used was that 2 years ago, so not last year, 2 years ago, both Milwaukee and Washington had top five defenses and shaky offenses. And, you know, I don't think they were bottom five, but they were, you know, not good. Both those teams won more than 37 games. Milwaukee won 41, Washington won 46. So those are kind of the template for me. And we don't know exactly how they're going to fit their rotations. And I think there are a lot of reasons that their offseason frustrated me, but I feel it's not my favorite line, but I feel somewhat comfortable in the over.
Yeah, I went with the over as well. Let me ask you this. Do you think that just based on this year only, is Serge Ibaka a talent upgrade over Victor Oladipo?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think he'll be better. He's a better player than Oladipo this year, for sure.
Yeah, so. And Elfrid Payton, I've been critical of him in the past. There is always a chance with a guy like him that he can do better, that this is the time that he figured it out. And they have more depth. I mean, it's weird because their depth is excessive. They actually are one of those few teams that has it in the front court, but that can be a good thing in terms of regular season win total, because as long as it doesn't nuke their chemistry, they have guys that can withstand it. And they're a team, depending on who it happens, they could actually loosen some things up if there's an injury. And I believe in Vogel. You know, I think that he did a good job in Indiana. They had successful defenses sometimes when their talent wasn't all the way there. Of course, they had amazing defenses when they did. And like Vooch could do better there. I think he could be better than he was defensively. But then Biombo and Ibaka and Aaron Gordon could all be big helps there. And, you know, they have some interesting depth pieces. We'll see who they actually play.
Other than at point guard, I think that this is one of those teams that doesn't really have any holes in their rotation. I agree with you that I think the defense could be outstanding. They've got Biombo and Vucevic. I mean, they were not that good on defense last year. They still did have a 36 win point differential nonetheless last year. So, and they won 35. I would imagine that they would be better this year. I don't think they're going to get to 40, but I think that they can really stop people. I think that their young guys should be better. You know, even someone like Hazonia, who played at replacement level or below last year, he should at least make some improvements. Ibaka is better than anyone they had at power forward last year. Aaron Gordon to take another step forward. Payton should be a little bit better this year. One of DJ Augustin or CJ Watson hopefully can give them some average-ish backup point guard play, even though I didn't particularly care for either of those contracts. They've got Biombo and Vucevic. They can mix and match there at center when appropriate. Jeff Green is a decent enough backup if needed at either forward spot. If, you know, again, making $15 million a year is crazy, but it's only for 1 year. So I think that, yeah, I think, you know, probably I'm thinking like 38 wins for these guys, 37. And they definitely have the potential. Payton has great defensive potential as well. They have the potential to be a top five defense. And if you're a top five defense, you know, you're probably, it's pretty difficult not to even be close to 500. So I think I like these guys to go over that 36.5 as well.
Philadelphia, how are we going to handle this? Do we want to talk about what we thought before the Ben Simmons injury came out?
Yeah, they were 27.5 beforehand, which I went for the under on. They were off the board because of Ben Simmons, who, if you haven't heard, suffered what was initially termed a sprained ankle, now is a Jones fracture in his right foot.
It's Jones fracture?
Fifth metatarsal fracture, which I think is a Jones fracture. So
there are a couple other types it could be, but Jones is, the most common.
It seems like everyone is freaking out.
It sounds like Philly. Jones, though.
Yeah, because it's Philly and guys get injured, especially the other reason I think it's Jones too is because that's the same thing that happened with Cameron Payne. We'll talk about on the OKC section tomorrow. But when you have that inversion ankle sprain, you're basically coming down on the outside of your foot. Kevin Durant aggravated his Jones fracture with that back in 2014-15 when Mo Spates undercut him. And so I would guess that that's probably what it is. That's normally 6 to 8 weeks. Sometimes it doesn't work, and then you have to do like the bone reset thing that Durant had. I think we're all pretty familiar with what the process is there. So this is not the end of the world. It's not a disaster. There have definitely been people saying, oh, I can't believe it, Philly. Like, this is happening again. Like, not again with these guys. They're so cursed. So I'm not willing to go that far yet. It's definitely going to be a setback for his rookie season. But I think my guess would be that he'll be back at the start of December. It's sad that he's going to miss some time. If I had to guess when this comes back on the board, it'll be like, you know, 24.5 or something like that. I don't actually think that losing him is really going to hurt them that much on the floor, though, because I think he's just at the point where he has these great gifts, but has not ever played with a great amount of intensity in his career. Can't shoot at all. I think he's a player who's going to rack up the box score stats, but I'm not sure that he really is going to be all that helpful just in terms of actually helping wins and losses this year.
And when you think that there's a possibility that his minutes are replaced by Dario Saric, who has a lot more experience at high-level basketball than Ben Simmons does, that might not be the worst thing in the world for them
and
in the short term.
And Saric, actually, I mean, he can at least pretend to shoot a three-pointer, you know, which I think will help.
And just in terms of awareness and capability, like, Saric has done it at a high level against good teams, both internationally and, you know, in professional basketball. And that's incredibly important in terms of just that adjustment. And it gives them a little bit of time to figure out their center stuff because they can slide guys over. I don't want them to do that long term, but in the short term they can do that. And so it's disappointing if it persists, of as always. And you know, it sucks as fans of the sport that we're gonna miss out on that for a little bit. But if the best case from this happens, it could actually be, in terms of wins and losses, a maybe a small net negative for the Sixers. And this seems like the year that they're a lot more competitive, but still not that good. And so I was going to go under anyway, you know, 27.5. But that you have that sort of a circumstance for teams where they replaced a lot of their non-NBA players with NBA players. And that is a massive thing in terms of wins. Like, that was when the Knicks were basically unplayable. And then the next year, I think they won like 8 or 9 more games. It's kind of that sort of a circumstance, except that the Sixers won 10 games last year. So
yeah, no, the
going
Knicks
to,
won 15 more games last year.
15 so. More. Okay. Yeah, so even that would still put them at their under. So that sort of a thing is there. And so, like, I think that's kind of the story with the Sixers, but there are a lot of reasons to be positive. The fact that they're going to start Joel Embiid on Tuesday in their first preseason game is unbelievably exciting to me, but we'll have to see how all that works out. And so you expect it to take a year, you know, crawl, walk, run, you know, that's really what you expect with this. So I'm going to go under. If it was at 24.5, that's right around where I would have had it in the first place. So I'd have to really think about it. Do we want, you want to, just for fun, if we guess that it's 24.5, do you want to make a bet on that just for the hell of it?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, just a little bit more background on these guys. They actually had the point differential of a lofty 16-win team last year. And
ooh.
but part of the reason I thought that they were so bad in close games, I thought that Brett Brown really was not very good in close games. And maybe that's to be understood because they didn't work on those a lot. They're just trying to do some basic things. I think they can be a lot better on defense this year with Henderson. Covington is solid on the wing as well. I think not having Simmons might actually help for a little bit. I'd be interested to see what Embiid does defensively. You have to imagine that his awareness, if he plays a lot, is going to be certainly behind the curve. And Nerlens Noel, clearly, I think, is, for this year, unless Embiid is just an absolute monster, which I don't expect for him early on in the year especially, and he's also 22, so he's missed a bunch of development time. I think Nerlens Noel, he came out and said, you know, this situation can't persist. He obviously is going to want a contract extension. He's not going to be healthy. You have to imagine the chemistry is not going to be amazing there. But he, I think, would be the best guy on the team. If they're actually playing with him and Henderson and Covington all in the starting lineup, I actually would feel pretty good about their defense, but I'm not at that point yet. They're going to be playing enough young guys where I think they're still going to be below average on that end. Anytime Jahlil Okafor plays, they're probably not going to be any good defensively either. Sergio Rodriguez and Jared Bayless is maybe the worst defensive point guard combination in the league, right up there. It's definitely a concern. Now that Simmons is out, I would love if they actually started Rodriguez. That's probably not going to happen, but I think he would actually really help them. I understood starting Bayless to just get more spot up shooting on the floor when it was Simmons. I would still go under the 24.5, especially because I think they're going to just focus more on young guys. Maybe they'll trade someone like Rodriguez or even Bayless as the season goes on, or even Henderson as well, who's on a great contract, although he wanted to be there in Philly, so maybe you don't trade him. But yeah, I would go tentatively under if, in fact, it ends up around that 24.5.
I'm going to pen myself in and go over 24.5. and just see where it goes, because that's just my feel on it. I think that, you know, the Simmons being out doesn't really change their win total that much. And while you are totally right that there are sensible reasons to see them, you know, take a step back during the season just in terms of their talent level, having Brian Colangelo running this team and coming off of what happened last season makes me think that they're going to be less aggressive in terms of those kinds of practices, just to be more clear as a line of demarcation. so that maybe they'll keep that stuff a little bit more together. And depending on how they want to use their remaining flexibility, you know, maybe they add somebody instead of adding somebody and just to cut them, kind of like the JaVale contract. Maybe they add somebody who's, you know, okay. We'll have to see how they use their 15-man, how they use their roster this year. That will be a very important story with them because they have so much flexibility. But I'm going to go over the 24.5.
Yeah, the other thing is that this team at least has enough depth now that they shouldn't be playing guys who are just awful any longer. There shouldn't be any of those guys out there. So that'll be helpful as well to avoid having total replacement level of guys out there like there have been at times the last years. Now you've got guys like Jeremy Grant, TJ McConnell, who are now really just bench guys, you know, maybe getting 5 minutes a game instead of getting 20, 25 minutes a game for them. So I think that's going to help them some. But yeah, I still like the end of that. Toronto, 49.5 over under. I predicted 49 before these over unders came out on my pod with Blake Murphy, and I see little reason to deviate from that.
This is a great line. Like, this is one that is set at just the perfect level. I'm super uncomfortable with it. And I went over, I was going back through their history, and 2 years ago, they won 29 games in that year when Lowry was kind of off. And I think their forwards are better than they were then. Norman Powell really does help them.
You said 29 games?
No, 40. 49. They won 49. Okay. So they won basically their exact projection, exact Vegas line. And so I was thinking about it. I think they're better than that this year. And they have all the reason in the world to push, considering Kyle Lowry is going to be a free agent after this year. And, you know, there is some of that. I think it's a little bit underrated with this team. The possibility, let's say it's a 5 to 10% chance that things really fall apart and they decide to blow it up because Masai is very proactive. But I think they're a little bit better than this. So I'm going over, but it's a great line.
These guys had the point differential of a 53-win team last year, so that's the baseline that I'm starting from. I find it very difficult to imagine that Lowry can repeat what he did last year, both on either end. He was fantastic on both ends. DeRozan had the most efficient season of his career, but I still don't see him getting any better on defense. They probably will get more from Damari Carroll, who's basically a full go at this point, it sounds like. But I think that they are really, really going to miss Bismack Biyombo, especially if Valanciunas goes down at all. They don't really have much in the way of options at backup center. It sounds like Jared Sullinger actually is going to start at the four, which I don't think, I mean, that front court of him and Valanciunas does not project to be particularly good defensively, and it's just a little bit of a concern for me. So the biggest thing is Lowry. If he does what he did last year, I think they can get into the 50s. But I just don't anticipate that that's realistic for him at this point in his career. And yeah, I mean, maybe they get over if Norman Powell blows up, Carroll blows up, they play him more at the four. That could be really helpful if they get something out of Bebe or get something out of Pirtle. But too much unproven here in the front court with these guys, and Lowry as a regression candidate. And I think that I don't think that they're going to be way under. I think they'll still be, you know, in the top four in the East probably, but 49 seems good for me. So I will tentatively go with the under for these guys.
A piece of free advice to any team that is facing the Raptors and has a two guard that can handle the ball: run 2-4 and 2-5 pick and rolls as much as you can, and just do it that way, because DeRozan just won't, he'll just be like, meh. And he won't do that. Sullinger can be a very shaky, at best, pick-and-roll guy. And, like, Orlando, for example, should run, when they play them, they should run their entire offense through Fournier. And we'll see if teams actually do that. I've been hopeful that they're going to do that, that teams are going to go that route more often than they do. And Toronto is in this strange place because they have, like, where they have some interesting pieces is at places where they have entrenched starters. Like, Norman Powell is awesome. But Norman Powell just, it seems like, Dwayne Casey isn't really going to play him as much as he should. And as you said, you know, the center spot and the power forward spot are shaky, and the guys that they have to kind of go in there aren't there. And so, you know, like, maybe there's this outside dream I've had of like, oh, we hear some good news about Bruno Caboclo out of camp, but I haven't heard anything yet. So it's a very it's a tentative over, but I think this is another year where it works out. And then after that, we'll see.
Washington, 42.5. I predicted on the podcast with Mike Prada, 41. A lot of that, I actually really want to like these guys. And 42.5 just seems like a little bit too much. I think they'll be in the mix for the eighth seed for sure. I was worried about John Wall's health after having two knee surgeries. Reports initially are positive. He hasn't quite been cleared for contact yet, but he's been reportedly bouncy, throwing down some dunks. So that's a positive sign, at least. Maybe there's something to believe in there. And I think if he can get back to being where he was 2 years ago, that they will actually go over. And I think these guys are going to defend. I think their depth at center is solid. I like the Mihimi pickup, at least for this year. Another team that hopefully will have less just terrible guys in the rotation this year than they had a year ago, and they still, I think, got to 41 and had about that level of point differential. So I don't feel great about going with the under here. If this were a win or two lower, I would probably feel better about going over, because I predicted 41. That's pretty obvious. I'll stop rambling now. So under.
I think that you're underselling it a lot. So they won 41 last year. Beal missed 27 games. They got Markieff Morris late, and they upgraded a coach. So you think about all of those things as reasons to...
Are we sure they upgraded a coach? I guess the reports were that they kind of quit on Whitman last year. I don't know if
exactly
from a strategic
Whitman from his first couple of years, other than clipboard spinning, did a very good job. Like, I think that he allowed them to buy in on defense. Like, that was a team that I think outperformed their talent defensively, which is very important and a great sign of a successful coach. And guess what? Scotty Brooks has done that too. So I think that can help them a lot. It's a weird thing with their kind of depth on the perimeter that, you know, they're relying a lot on guys that haven't really proven it in the NBA, whether that be Kelly Oubre, Satoransky, and Trey Burke. But all those guys have potential, and their starting lineup is pretty solid. So I think I'm pretty comfortable in the over here as long as John Wall stays healthy. There are some potential chemistry issues, especially when you have two guys that at center that you both paid, one that you just paid money to, another who's been just a stalwart for you. And I've mentioned before, I've written about that the center trade market is really shaky. So like if they're sitting there and those guys are really cranky, that's not really going to work out. But they have a lot of talent, and I think it could work. So I'm a believer in the Wizards at this low of a level. Like, I don't think they're going to be a contender in the East. I'm not picking them to finish second in the Eastern Conference or even first. But I think that they'll be a solid playoff team.
Yeah, I think that's entirely possible. I just, with Beal and Wall's injury histories, those guys are so essential to what they do. That's the big concern for me here. If those guys stay healthy, I like them to win 45 games and be a solid playoff team in the East. I agree with you there. I'm just a little bit less concerned or a little bit more concerned with the health than you are. All right, so we're going to save just our overall bets for tomorrow in terms of what we did last year, where we actually assigned values to five bets each and saw who won. I won last year on the strength of Golden State collapsing after being up 3-1. Danny had their title odds, which were something ridiculous, like 4-1 or 5-1 to start last year, and would have won. So I ended up winning last year. I also won our over-unders last year by, I think, like 4 or 5. I can't remember exactly what. I'm sure you have that seared in your memory, Danny. But
I blacked it out entirely. I know you won, but that's all I know.
But I do want to talk a little bit about some of the division and conference title odds. Were there any that really popped out to you as ones that are any good?
Yeah, there are a couple that did. One that I think we both like for division is Charlotte has 4-1 in the Southeast. The Southeast division has gotten, you know, with Miami taking a big step back, it's wide open.
Yeah, and this is as of September 22nd when these came out. So that might have actually changed a little bit. I wasn't able to find updated odds. So apologies if that's changed, but we of course did come up with these at the time. So it's not, we're not cheating here.
The other one that stands out to me is...
Let's talk about Charlotte here first. I agree with you on Charlotte, and I would actually put them as the favorites to win that division. Atlanta is at 9-5, Washington 2-1, Charlotte 4-1. I have Charlotte projected for the most wins in that division. So I think if the team that I think is going to be the favorite in that division is 4-1 odds, yeah, sign me up for that.
The other one that I don't like as much, but what would be my next favorite of division odds, is Detroit at 12-1. Just on the logic of if Cleveland really doesn't care and Detroit could do it. Like, I don't think it's a super likely thing, but if at 12-1, it doesn't have to be super likely to be worth it.
Yeah, I could see, and I think I said this on the podcast with Feldman, I could see them getting into the low 50s, and you could see Cleveland getting into the low 50s as well, as they just kind of take things pretty easy. I don't think that that's likely, but there's like a 1 in 12 chance that maybe Detroit wins that division. It wouldn't, if everything goes right for Detroit, I could see them getting into, you know, 53, 54 wins maybe, and I think that's well within the downside of Cleveland, at least in the regular season. So, yeah, I mean, not a ton of great ones there. Were there any that popped out for you as far as winning the conference? I mean, I know we think that Cleveland is just a huge, huge favorite there, and they are favored as such with odds of 4-15 to win the conference. But who do you like as the best bet out of the non-Cleveland teams?
Boston at 8-1, I think, is probably they have the most upside, and they have depth. So in case Cleveland suffered an injury that they couldn't come back from, I think Boston's someone who could take advantage of that. I also have them as the second best team in the East. And if we were going with a deeper one than that, I'd probably go Washington at 35-1. They have some guys, you know, John Wall, if he can break out to another level, could be there. And I could also see Washington, I mentioned this a little bit on another podcast I did, as a team that, as they did last year, they used their draft pick to get better in the short term. And I could absolutely see them repeating that, you know, let's say one of their centers plus their first round pick to get somebody who's even better. And I could see them doing that again.
Get another wing.
Being a fringy team that then catches it. And at 35-1, that's what you're betting on.
Yeah. Pistons might be another one there too. I think both of those have actually been now 40-1 instead of 35-1. Celtics is not bad at 8-1. But I mean, I still think you would take Cleveland over the field pretty comfortably here, but you know, maybe it's possible that just LeBron James, age 32, just moves into a new phase in his career, and this is kind of the last gasp for him as an absolute MVP level of player was this last finals. He certainly has gone downhill in the regular season the last couple of years, so maybe that's possible. I'm not predicting that. I think he's still going to be really, really good this year, but maybe that's possible, and maybe things open up as a result, because I do think Cleveland is just so incredibly dependent on what James does.
Yeah, I think it's certainly fair.
All right. Anything to plug before you go?
Always. So for Real Gym Radio, I've continued the annual tradition of doing over-unders with Arturo Galletti. On Thursday, I released the East. On Monday, I will release the West. And then wrote about Media Day for The Athletic. And well, so
by the way, for people who are listening to this podcast, why should they listen to that one in addition to this one? I assume you take like a little bit of a different approach there.
Yeah, we do. And Arturo has a background more in the like kind of the modeling and DFS community. So we also do a lot in terms of like incorporating other metrics. We use Andrew Johnson's from Nylon Calculus. We incorporate that as well. And he gets multiple lines for teams. So he got like, if you want to bet the over, you can do this. If you want to bet the under. So they're actually, depending on which book you're looking at, you can get different lines. And we talked MVP odds, which is one of the more interesting ones. It was funny because we did a lot of that. I did it off the cuff. I didn't know what they were. MVP, coach of the year, those sorts of things, which weren't a part of our discussion.
Awesome. All right. Well, don't forget about our sponsors for today. SeatGeek, with the NBA preseason and season starting up. Great time to use that cap space code in that free SeatGeek app. And also Movement Watches. Make sure you check those out. They have some really, really beautiful timepieces for a lot less than you'd be paying at a department store, because they've cut out the middlemen and their stuff just looks great. I'm really excited to own one, and you guys should check that out as well. That website is Movement Watches. That's MVMTWatches.com/CapSpace to let them know that you came from us. Talk to you all tomorrow with the West Overunders. Till then.